D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 388, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Brad Torrey from TTCScomputerservices.com. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Been a longtime listener and wanted to finally get on and have a few things to say. So
awesome.
I'm excited to be here.
That's great. We love when new technicians, or not new technicians, but we love when any technicians come out on the show and share what they're doing in their shops and what's kind of helping them in their businesses, because I think everybody has a little bit different slant on how they do business. And I think we all can learn from each other. And that's one of the reasons I do this show, is because I enjoy that, you know, talking to other techs and finding out what they're doing, you know, kind of the backroom trade secrets, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's kept me listening to Podnuts for so long, is just listening to the different techs come on and talk about how they do things. You know, sometimes they're talking about business practices, and sometimes they're talking about how to remove viruses or whatever it is. But it's always been helpful. And so, you know, and I've certainly got, this last 2 years has been quite a ride. So, you know, my business is completely transformed probably 14 times.
I hear you. I think a lot of us are going through that right now. So why don't you go ahead and get started and give us a little background into basically how you got started in computer repair.
Okay. Yeah. I started off probably like a lot of people at home. We got a computer when I was like 8 years old, and this was back in probably like 86. I had a DOS machine, and nobody in my family knew anything about computers, and I didn't even really know, and I was a kid and whatever, and I don't even know where my mom found some of this stuff. Like, she came up with a few tips and tricks that kind of got me into it, and then we would go through the MS-DOS manual together, like just trying to figure out how to play a game. Like, how do you load this software onto this thing and make this game work? Because at 8 years old, that's all I cared about.
Right.
Was like, can
that's
I play like the old Learning Company games? I think there was one called Rocky's Boots. And if anybody remembers that, I don't know. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, wow. Rocky's Boots.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those black screen, green text and like really janky graphics. And you'd like match up some things and make them a little machine work. But anyway, That was probably, I didn't know it at the time, but that was my command line training.
Right.
Like working with the original DOS, and then progressed through all the different versions of Windows. And I never really got huge into computers, really. I just liked the fact that they could do stuff and getting work done with them and all that, you know, and just kind of going through and saving money here and there. We'd fix something on our own. But for the most part, I just kind of used computers. I didn't really work on them. And then, you know, through the years, like more and more stuff, it got easier to work on. And so, you know, you hard drives, when you wanted to put one in, you used to have to know like how the sectors worked and what to put into the BIOS. You had to know what a BIOS was to put a hard drive in a computer. And now you pretty much plug it in, and as long as it's got partitions on it, you're good to go. So, you know, as computers kind of caught up to me, as far as I didn't want to get down to that level, I started getting more and more into fixing them. And then I took a few classes in college, some basic programming stuff and Novellware. I took like just a level one networking class. I didn't even know why I wanted to take it. I just did. I took HTML just for fun. So then once I, you know, had kind of these things were converging and I was starting to get into more and more of it. And I never really worked in computers. I just kind of like always knew that I was going to or something. So like I kept working on this background. And then my career split off. I did manufacturing, and I was like a mechanic for a while, and got into real estate for a short time, and then the real estate market crashed, and I was like, well, I'm glad I didn't invest a whole lot of time into that one.
Right.
And all the while doing the computer thing on the back end. And then in 2004, I decided, hey, I can do this. I'm going to be a computer repair tech, and like opened up a business out of my home, and I was picking up computers or going to people's houses. I didn't really have enough computer experience to really justify doing this, but you know, most of the time people were happy and I got things done. But you know, I didn't have the business experience or the computer experience, and the residential market's hard. I hands up or applaud anybody that can actually pull that off, because they drove me crazy. You're always chasing business, and every time you walk in, there's some weird setup, and you know, I mean, that's probably what you do most of the time.
Right, right.
But I was scared of business, and there was no way I was going to walk into a business and try to sell my services. So I figured I needed to pick up some cash flow and got into bartending. I just like had a friend that worked for a catering company, so I was doing some, you know, weddings and corporate events, and then that did not quite... I like to get into things that I'm not qualified for, apparently. So my next thing was like, oh, well, this restaurant's remodeling and reopening and they're hiring everybody. So I'm going to go in there and tell them I can bartend, and lied my pants off, got in there, got a bartending gig. And then, you know, the only way that this kind of tracks into my career path as a computer technician is that led me into this whole like 5-year career in the hospitality business. Okay. And so I got a lot of experience both in the corporate side and on the operations side, and got into food costing. And so that got me into databases and just general, like I was gaining all this experience and working with all these different people in the restaurant business. And that got me into working on POS systems. So there's at the time, a small restaurant chain that's now bigger. They had got an IT guy that used to work for another restaurant chain that kind of got them started. So they didn't just go to Aloha and buy the system from them. They had him kind of set it up, and then they were taking care of it themselves, which most small businesses can't do because the support is not there and they don't know how to do it. So anyway, I got into supporting Aloha. I got to learn Aloha as a program. If you don't work for Aloha, you don't know, there's no training available. Like, they don't want anyone else working on it. So I got some, you know, kind of lucky break training there by trial by fire, and that ended up helping me get my computer business off the ground. So okay. I got laid off at one point from my restaurant job and got thrown in, and here we go, you know, what am I going to do? Because I didn't really want to go back to that world again. And the next day, when I was like trying to figure out what I was going to do, buddy called me up and said, hey, I know you're not working right now, and I know you've been in doing computers for all this time. I need you to, you know, one of my friends going to call you. They have a small business and they need computer support. And they ended up being, they're my first client and my best client, my longest term client. They have like 7 locations now. And I do all their everything. So, that was like, okay, well, that officially makes me a computer guy now. So let's do it. And, you know, there's good and bad with that. I wasn't started off with like an actual business plan. But I got going. I had enough money to kind of keep things, bills paid, while I figured out how I was going to manage this business. And then people that I knew in the industry were like, oh, hey, you know Aloha support. Can you come and do this? And so I was like rebuilding their databases. And that actually became, so I have like 2 tracks where I support this one client and some other small businesses. And then over here, I'm like an Aloha consultant.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't, and then I helped somebody open a restaurant. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ducks, the hockey player, Teemu Selänne. I don't know if you follow hockey at all.
Not really.
Anyway,
I'm a computer nerd. I don't really, sports are not my thing. No, I know who the Ducks are. I'm just messing with you.
Well, Teemu, is the captain. He's like he's like the Gretzky of our generation, you know?
Okay.
He opened up a steakhouse down in Southern California. So I got connected through him through, you know, networking, and I opened their restaurant for him. I got their IT stuff off the ground and all their POS systems in place and supported that for a while. We ended up, you know, kind of mutually parting ways just because our business models didn't match up. They didn't want to pay as much as I needed.
Sure, sure.
So, but now I still go down there and enjoy a meal every once in a while. And we, you know, Teemu's a great guy. As far as celebrities go, like, he's awesome.
Right.
But anyway, so all this being said, we got to a point where, or I got to a point where everything was relying on me. Consulting, you know, is based on knowledge that I have. And I was the only guy in the shop supporting these other clients. And I couldn't do it anymore. I was like working 16 hours a day, and maybe I'd get lucky and work 4 hours a day, like 7 days a week.
Oh.
So that kind of got me thinking I need to get a partner or something. Like we can't do this alone. Cause if I'm sick or tired or tied up, I need, you know, two people should be able to manage this. I always wanted to be one guy. And then I was like, no, two people can do this. and then, you know, now I'm at a point where like, I don't think the two people can do this anymore, you know? So,
but that's a good problem to have, is that your business is growing and changing, that you're able to bring on more people. And I think a lot of times as computer repair techs, we have a hard time letting go of what we do for our customers and letting go of anything in our business. But the reality is sometimes we have to do that in order to grow, or we're growing so big that we're just going to pull our hair out and, you know, just wear ourselves thin. So I think that's great that, that, you know, as a technician, you recognize that, hey, I need help with certain things, and we gotta pull some stuff together here to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. You asked my business partner. I'm not very good at letting things go. Everything's been in my head for so long. And I've been like, you know, building up relationships with these people for so long that even though I'm like, dude, take the reins, like go for it. You and I are on the same level. They know you now, to go talk to them. But he's still like, you know, they're still your client. Like, you know, he holds back and he's just being respectful because I still carry so much around in my head. We're trying to solve that problem.
Me too. I still haven't put anything down on paper yet, but it's on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's on the list.
But then my next on the right above that on the list is another system for keeping better lists. You know?
Exactly. I was going to say it's on the list that I haven't created yet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. It's there. It's floating around in the back of my head. You know?
That's it.
Yeah. So I started the process, and this would be, you know, I don't know how I would go about this a better way, but I needed to find a business partner. And I didn't want to hire somebody because the business wasn't always stable enough that I could guarantee a paycheck for somebody. And, you know, sometimes it was great. It was more than we could handle, but sometimes, you know, there's lean times.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Plus, I wanted someone to help bounce ideas off of. I just didn't want to hire somebody and have them just be a $12 an hour guy. Right. So my first, of course, mistake was to go with Craigslist.
And I'm sorry. I love Craigslist. Yeah, not at all. Go ahead.
I found an iPad on Craigslist. It was a great deal. And I don't regret that decision at all. But business partners, don't look for a business partner on Craigslist. I interviewed probably 20 people over the phone and narrowed it down to like three people that I actually went and met.
Okay.
And this one guy seemed awesome. You know, we talked to him and, you know, he's a little bit older guy and he had some experience. He'd kind of left the computer thing and he came back. When I went and met with him, he was, and nothing wrong with this, but we're talking about a computer support company in Orange County where there's a level of professionalism that's expected of us out here, you know, versus maybe a smaller town. And just in general, we're going into big companies. They want to see somebody professional show up.
Sure.
I'm wearing a collared shirt and slacks and dress shoes. And he rolled up in literally a flannel shirt and unshaven for days and jeans and, you know, whatever. And after talking to him for about 5 minutes, I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. This guy doesn't actually know anything. He was just hoping to get picked up. So I went through a process like that, ended up partnering with a guy who turned out to be totally nuts and unworkable. I was like, how did I not pick this up in like, you know, conversation after conversation?
Are these all from Craigslist?
Yep. These are the Craigslist guys.
Gotcha. The Craigslist. So, okay. The Craigslist gang, we'll call them.
Yeah. So the Craigslist gang was great. Like the one guy I actually worked with for about 3 months and he met all my clients and people started to, like, first they liked him and then they started realizing what I was realizing, that he was nuts. So we parted ways. And I hope I never see him again.
If you don't mind, was he doing something, you know, and we don't need to, you know, personal things, but was he doing something in the business that people were just like, he's not doing the right type of job, or what was it that made him nuts?
You know, he had some great computer skills and experience. And he complimented me in areas. He had a little bit more like big IT, big corporate IT kind of experience. Right. So he was good with servers and stuff, and that was great. And he was, it's hard to explain without meeting the guy, but he was creepy.
Okay.
Like at first he seemed fine, but then he just got weird. And I heard him talking to tech support to Rackspace one time, and it's cool to be conversational, but he like instantly jumped into it. Just, I could tell over the phone, I could feel her discomfort. Like he would just, questions he would ask. He's just a weird dude.
Gotcha. And, okay.
Yeah, so clients started telling me behind the scenes, kind of think, hey, you know, I know that you need a partner, and this guy is helping you out, but he may not be the best choice, because he was kind of stalking one of my clients too. Like, oh, it was weird.
Okay.
So it was like, let's not do this anymore.
Okay.
And then he got unresponsive and everything. So that just all fell apart. But luckily, that was only 3 months, and he did help me get some stuff figured out.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, it's tough because, you know, and it's good that your clientele didn't actually hold it against you or anything like that. I think a lot of times, I think that's why we don't want to let go of certain things, because we feel that our clientele is going to come back against us and say, oh, your company sucks or whatever. But I always look at it as long as I can talk to the client and let them know what's going on. Hey, I apologize about this. You know, we'll get this worked out. I don't want you to be treated like this or whatever. I think clients are very resilient in putting up with some of that, you know, some of the growing pains that we go through as computer repair techs.
Yeah. And that's why I keep, you know, my relationships with my clients is the most important thing. They'll forgive me for not fixing a printer if I'm around and responsive, and I'm right. Usually there, and they, you know, they're happy with the service. So,
right.
That's the only thing that's kept me in business, is just good client customer care and making these relationships work. So actually I pull on my food and beverage background now, that, you know, I worked in an R&D department for a well-known restaurant chain. So every once in a while I show up with like homemade cookies or bread pudding, you know, like it'll come in a package. It looks like it came from a store, but I'm like, no, I made this. And then they show up and it, that's actually sometimes when there's one client, they're awesome, but they're a little slow to pay sometimes.
Okay.
So, you know, every once in a while, if the bill gets racked up a little bit too much, we'll go in, we'll make something, you know, really nice. And we'll go, hey, we're just going to come by, bring you some treats and stuff. Every time, leave with a check for the full amount. Like,
nice.
Expecting, yeah, it's, if any, you know, if you know someone or you can prep, like, bring people that work in offices love treats, man. Just bring them.
That's a like great part tip.
Part of our quarterly maintenance is to show up with some desserts.
Okay. No, that's good.
Yeah. So I racked my brain forever trying to figure out like what we were going to do for some kind of a reward program, or, you know, what do you give somebody, a gas card or.
Right. Right.
You know, you can give USB keys, but nobody really, that's not
They're
really.
They're a dime a dozen now. Yeah. You can buy them for like, you know, a nickel at the dollar store.
Yeah. So yeah, we settled on desserts, you know.
No, that's great. You know what? In America, everybody likes food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. Very cool.
But yeah, so this whole progression, where I'm at now is I found a business partner through networking. And you know, I just met people and I just happened upon the guy. He showed up and ended up being in the right place at the right time. So
now what type of networking are you talking about?
I just always keep tabs on people.
Okay.
I'm always catching up with people, either through Facebook or in person, or I give them a shout or we meet up. Just people that I've met over the years of different jobs, either while I worked at a company or now as I'm meeting people. And I haven't really taken advantage of networking events. It's kind of our next thing on our roadmap.
Okay.
So this is just really more, you know, old school, just meet with people and keep tabs on people. So I had met this guy through a client that I worked with. He was working for them, and now he's working with me. So
great.
We complement each other. It was just like the perfect match. He's kind of like I'm very linear. I'll go through a problem one step at a time, and I'll go through a track, and I'm very, you know, precise about how I do things. And we call him Hulk Smash. He just smashes his way through a problem until it's, you know, so
get it fixed no matter the cost. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of rein him back sometimes, and then he gives me that like push to just try stuff. He's just always coming up with great ideas. Whereas I find something that works and I like to just kind of go with it.
Right. Sure.
So it's a good match, you know, is what I'm saying.
Right.
We work well together. But we're really pushing right now to kind of redefine what MSP means to us, you know, managed services.
We're
running across a lot of competition where they call it managed services, but really it's just, hey, pay me every month.
Right.
We'll fix stuff when it breaks. And it's like, well, how's that different than what you do now when they charge by the hour? It's just, it's better for you. Not really better for the client.
Right.
So, you know, working with a smaller business, their budget is limited. You know, they don't necessarily, we have to convince them that IT is something they should budget for, you know?
Right. That is hard in the smaller businesses because they don't think they're in the break fix mentality where when it breaks, I'll call somebody out, you know, the four numbers I have in my Rolodex to, you know, call out, and whoever answers the phone first, that's who's going to come out and fix my problem, and we'll pay them an exorbitant amount of money until the next time.
Yep. So, we were like, okay, so how can we get, I'm thinking from the perspective of my current client base, cause I know them. I can picture a conversation with them. What can we offer that's going to make them say, okay, this is a deal. Let's do this. So we've been really working on, a lot of them don't even still have a great disaster recovery plan. They might have backups. It's always something that gets pushed back in our little meetings. They're like, okay, well, we still have a backup, so we kind of need to do something with that, because if your server goes down, you lose your entire client history and you're screwed. And they're like, oh yeah, that's important, but we want you to do this first. Like, okay, all right, so I'm not going to do it for free. So, you know, let's put it on the roadmap.
There you go. Yeah.
So we just say, you know what? They can't be in charge of these decisions anymore. You know, like when they need a computer, they call up their Uncle Joey and he shows up with a computer somehow, and I have to like make it work. We're like, no, you're not doing that anymore. So how can we do this? And the way it works for us is, you know, we have a takeover fee, and we have all these standards in place, because we're also building this model out so that we can still manage more clients with the same two guys.
Right.
Like, how are we going to pull this off? So we just go through every piece of every business, every like networking equipment and front, you know, all the way down to the computers. What can we do that's going to make this always work?
Right.
And if money's no object to an extent, then we can do whatever we think is necessary. And if they're on a regular monthly plan, the better job we do, the less they're going to call us and the more money we make. Like, we don't, every time we have to stop and break fix something, we're losing money.
Right, exactly.
And for them, the benefit is, well, if they never have to call us because nothing's broken, then their business continues to function and all they have to do is worry about whatever their core business is. So even that's a hard sell, because you're like, okay, well, we're asking for like $100 a month per computer or something.
Sure.
And for someone that thinks that they don't pay anything a month for IT, even though it's not really true, that's, you know, now they're thinking, well, our budget was zero and now you're asking for $1,000 a month. Where is that? And we're like, well, that's not really true. You guys spend all this money with us and you have to buy new hardware. So our package basically is, we standardize our networking equipment. Like, this is the stuff that we know. Okay. We've documented it. We know the ins and outs of these, you know, this line of products. We make sure that if we do a takeover, we re-terminate we check all the cables and re-terminate. You know, we kind of go down through the entire place.
Okay.
Document everything, clean everything up, make it look nice. If a computer's a little bit older, we'll throw a solid state drive in it and replace the power supply. Basically just go through and go, hey, if this was my network and I was responsible for it, what would I do? And do it all.
There you go.
So the last 3 days we've been at a client's office. It was supposed to be like an 8-hour job, and it was like Friday night 8 hours, Saturday night 8 hours. We're probably going to have to do some remote work to finish the job up today. So it takes some time, but the dividends are going to pay out, you know?
No, that's good. That's great to have a standardized system that, you know, that you can put together that you guys know. Do you have any name brands out there that you're working with that you guys like right now that might help somebody out?
Yeah. If you want to get some, you know, people are familiar with SonicWall, mm-hmm. they're familiar with Cisco, they're familiar with Juniper, and WatchGuard. Those are all great firewalls, and I actually like all of them. But if you're doing small businesses and you're trying to sell them on they need PCI compliance and they need these features and they need, you know, two internet connections coming in from two different ISPs and that needs to connect to the router and needs to be load balanced or failed over, you can get a lot of really awesome features out of a TP-Link firewall. Okay. TP-Link, I used to think of TP-Link as like Trendnet or Tenda, you know?
Right, right.
The budget brands. They're not like those companies. They are trying to, they're price competitive, but they put some really solid things together and they have a good warranty package. They have good support. You can call them. Once you've purchased it, you can just call them and there's a tech that actually knows what they're talking about that'll answer the phone and they'll help you walk through something.
That's good because, you know, support in this business nowadays is that's tough to come by. If you can get a company to stand behind their product or service, I don't really care if there's a difference in cost or whatever. I know, you know, I bought some of the TrendNet stuff. I personally have never had a problem with it. I haven't had clients have a problem, but you know, you can tell it's a cheaper made product. But as long as I got somebody that I can call up and say, hey, so this is what's going on and they can help me fix my problem, that to me is gold.
Yeah. I had a forehead slapper like a couple weeks ago. It was in my own house of all things. I'm like building out my own network to match my clients' networks just to, you know, eat your own dog food kind of thing. And
that's a good idea, actually. I like that.
Yeah. I can replicate basically everything here. So I had an access point just for Wi-Fi and apparently it had some router functions in it and I hadn't turned those off. Like I just didn't think about it because it was an access point. Why does it have router features in it? So
also was it trying to do DHCP sending addresses out to all the out to the network.
So the router and the access point were fighting for control of the DHCP scope and then and it killed everything. Like I couldn't access anything and I was freaking out. I'm like, what the heck happened? Like all I did was plug this, you know, I didn't even connect the dots for a timeline because so I got on support and they're like, do you have anything else in that, like an access point in there? You know, it was like, so I unplugged that and everything worked fine. So but it was nice to have someone that could actually, that was not something that comes off of a script. That's something that an actual tech, you know, would think.
I'm just curious, but in your, you working with this type of stuff, have you run into any other access points that do have, you know, they run like a router, they have the DHCP scope and all that kind of stuff. And cause I'm trying to think there's really not that much difference because you could take a router and turn it into an access point. So I'm wondering if these companies are just kind of taking that same firmware and throwing it in these things and going, yeah, we're going to call this an access point, but you could use it as a router or you could use it as some, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think they start off with at least a basic router functionality so that you could plug in a computer to it to configure it, like at the base level.
Okay, gotcha.
At least it will assign an IP to a computer so that you can connect to it through the web GUI and set it up. Gotcha. I think that's where it mostly comes from.
Okay.
They're not really meant to be routers because they don't really have any router features aside from just being able to assign some IPs.
Gotcha. Okay. That's good to know.
As far, what else are we using? We are experimenting. Oh, you know, QNAP is another one of those companies that's kind of fighting with Synology, the big boys that, you know, QNAP's coming around, with some really awesome stuff. That's also at a really good price point. You can get a QNAP, NAS that's capable of actually running a server OS. You know, you can install Windows on it and it's like a virtual machine.
Okay.
So it'll do double duty for you. It'll replace a server. It has Active Directory functions built in just to the QNAP software. It'll manage cameras if you want to do security camera footage. Manage that access to like an app if somebody wants to be able to check their cameras on their phone outside of the office. So QNAPs are awesome. We're kind of looking at it as, you know, we can virtualize this server, go over here and put on this QNAP. Now we don't have this big beast of a server that when it fails is going to be $2,000. QNAP's like $500. You throw in a couple of hard drives, you're spending about $700 on a server replacement and a NAS with all these awesome features that are built into it. So the QNAPs are they have smaller ones if you just want to have a nice little NAS box that can manage some cameras for you and it'll do automatic scheduled backups on all your machines in your office. It has access control, user level access control. It has a lot of awesome features. So I would check those out too.
Okay. No, that sounds good.
So that's, we want one of those for backup purposes and disaster recovery in every office, but sometimes it's a hard sell. So now we're saying, hey, you know, you have this server sitting over here that if it fails, it's going to cost you like $5,000 and a week to get it up and running.
Right.
We can put this box in over here for $500 that's going to at least give us a way to back up and virtualize the server so that if it goes down, we can pop it back up in another machine really fast and get you guys up and running, and while we figure out what we're going to do next.
Right. No, that's good.
So, which leads into the job we did, this 3-day job. We were chasing down, we hadn't actually, you know, you virtualized a machine and got it up and running before, like on in VirtualBox or something, but we'd never done it with this QNAP. And we just didn't have the right program or tool to create the right format that okay. they needed. So we were running all these things. It took like 3 days to figure this out. We were like creating a VHD and trying to convert it to something else, pulling a TIB from Acronis and trying to convert it into the OVF and all these different formats. It was crazy. So that was like the holdup, because that was the linchpin. We were going to use the box that was running as a server to replace another computer in the office, like this whole domino thing, like musical computers. So we had to get the server off first.
Sure.
Like that needed to happen. And that was, it was killer. We were just sitting there going, what the heck? And then one version of Acronis that we had wasn't able to like browse the network, so we couldn't find the backup that we'd pulled to restore it. It was just like one thing after another. And 2 days later, we were like, screw this. We're just going to install it from scratch. So we ended up just doing a scratch Windows install and
okay.
building it up again, which you wouldn't think would be the faster way to go. But in this case, it was.
Right.
So we got to figure that piece out. But that network, we also at the same time, we were building a gigabit network. So we replaced all their routing equipment because they had like homegrown, you know, just like a home Netgear router and
sure.
stuff like that. So we went in, we made sure every computer had a gigabit NIC in it. We made sure that, you know, if everything was at least Cat5e going everywhere throughout the building, and all the patch panels and everything was all Cat5e. Replaced the router, put in a really nice switch, like a level 2 managed switch with PoE in it, so that they're planning on going VoIP soon.
Okay.
So we wanted to have that ability so we could power the phones. And just as a side note, just another little tip, like we're looking at, instead of doing, there's power injectors and there's all these things you can do to get power to cameras and phones. Every once in a while, VoIP phones need to be rebooted. And if we can reboot the switch and have all the phones power cycle, it's a huge time savings, right? We don't have to tell somebody to go through and unplug and plug in every phone or whatever. Like
okay.
we can put in a remote power switch that we can control over TCP/IP, and it's labeled like these are the VoIP, the PoE switch is in outlet 2. So log into that guy and remote power cycle the switch. And we don't even have to tell them to go into the rack and find the things or whatever. We can just flip a switch from our home office and
very
we've just
nice.
Power cycled all the phones in the office. So.
Okay. No, that, you know, and I know a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, use the home-based routers and stuff like that, because that's all somebody that works there said, hey, I can put this thing in and we'll do this and that. But
yep.
just simple things like that, where you have a managed switch where you can do something different with it than what you can do with these other, you know, routers and switches, that makes it, you know, again, it's building the business for their functionality. So they don't have to worry about these things. They can run their business and build widgets or do whatever service they're doing. So they don't have to worry about all this other stuff. That's good management of business, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, and they don't always get it at first, but the first time they have a problem and we can call them and say, yeah, normally we would be sending you into the rack and you got to find this thing, but I got it. Click a button and it's all backing up
right.
and running. So they get it after that, you know.
That's good, yeah.
But yeah, you're chasing down, trying to convert a 10100 network to a gigabit network turned out to be like, you think you replace, you make sure all the equipment's capable and all the wiring should be good, and you start doing little like LAN speed tests, transfer files over or whatever and look at it, and even if things were registering as gigabit, they were still only pulling like 10 megabits per second. We're like, that's not even 100. That's 10.
Right.
Like, what is going on? So 4 hours later, we had re-terminated probably half of the wall plates in the office, because you'd open them up. And if you've ever seen those phone guys love these things. I hate them. It's, if you're going to splice two wires together, there's kind of a jelly pack
Yeah,
you put the two in, you have to squish it down, and it seals it with some kind of silicone gel or something. I don't know. We opened up the wall plate, and all eight strands from the Cat 5 were, for no reason at all, coupled to another set of loose wires. So you had probably, you know, when you terminate a Cat 5 cable, you're supposed to keep it as close to the twisted pair as possible so that you don't have all these unraveled wires. Like the twists need to be in place to keep noise on the line down. Well, these have probably got like an 8 or 9 inch just unraveled mess of tail with a coupler in the middle, and then it goes to the keystone. So we pull it out, and it's just this rat's nest, and so we're like, okay, we got to go check all of these now. So we started pulling, having to move furniture and pull all these plates off and reseat all these cables, and just, why was this like this? A couple of the patch cables were only capable of 10-100 for some reason, so we found those and pulled those out, and 4 hours later, we went from file transfers going at like 10 megs to 760 megs.
Okay.
So it was a lot of work, but now for us, like for them, they access QuickBooks over the network and some things like that. So they'll get better performance. And for us, when we need to do like imaging, because we pull images on a regular basis for disaster recovery, those images take 15 minutes versus 4 hours, you know, so it's,
that's a big difference. That's a huge difference.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was, dude, we were there until like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning last night. We were thinking we were going to get out around midnight. It was like 3 o'clock. And I said, oh, we're going to see the sun come up here. So
now what do you use for, imaging, the drives for, your data recovery?
We use, Acronis. So, they keep changing their names. Every version seems to be different, but in general, there's like a $25 license that you can install on every computer in the office. And then you have a Pixie server, and everything will push an image on the regular basis back. You can set it up for whatever kind of scheduling you want. And then, I don't know if they still call it this in the current version, but Snap Deploy is what it was called for a long time.
Okay.
Where, if the, Acronis puts a little preboot image into the something in the so when the computer boots up, and normally you'd see like push F2 for setup and push F12. Next step is you can push F11 or something to launch into Acronis recovery, and then it'll find the Pixie server on the network and it'll pull its image over. So
now, how often do you have the images backed up?
Our plan, like that we've been kind of talking about this a lot for the past couple of weeks. Our current thinking is to do one, get a perfect setup, and then pull an image there. And then we'll follow Patch Tuesday. So when Windows does their image, because that's the biggest, if we're not installing new software, their data is being backed up some other way, like on a NAS.
Right.
So the image, pretty much, we're just going to keep up with updates.
Right.
So basically on a monthly to a quarterly basis, we're still kind of kicking that around a little bit, but yeah.
Well, yeah, most of the workstations are all their access. So many things are online anymore or backed up in a database that's on a server anyways. It really, their machine is basically a window into whatever program they're going into. I mean, you know, no pun intended, but I mean, really that's what it is. That's a good, I think that's a good policy, you know, follow Patch Tuesday. And you know, because the worst case scenario is you can be, you know, a month behind. But even then, I don't think it's going to matter that much.
So. Right. And we use F-Secure is our antivirus of choice because it's not really an antivirus. It's like a management tool.
Right.
It has a lot of, it'll manage all your third-party updates and give you alerts, and you have a central dashboard. It's all a lot of great things that like Kaspersky does some of, but we like F-Secure. What else we got? That's pretty much where we're at now. We just have our roadmap of how we're going to move forward, to grow. So now you've got
yourself and another partner. So there's two of you and,
yes.
Now how long have you guys been together?
I actually, when my first technician business partner kind of fell apart, I was like, you know what? I need to get, if I can't find a good tech to work with, then I need to have somebody help like do admin work and management. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to just hire someone that's just going to do whatever I tell them to do. So I was fortunate through like family. I met my office administrator. She's toying with the title of Queen Bee, but
it's an awesome title.
Yeah. So she was actually more helpful than getting another tech, because she, first of all, I was like, look, I'm hiring you to babysit me. Like, you need to, you know, we'll work together and I'll set the roadmap. And then when stuff needs to happen, you need to make sure that I do it. So she's on me all the time about stuff, and it's awesome.
Okay. That's good.
But she has some web experience. So as far as development, so she does some small website work for us and just does all the billing and keeps track of stuff. And when we're doing business creation or business planning, she can, okay, so we need to find business insurance. Can you please go shop around? And she's got a lot of good business experience. So when I know I'm not just asking her to go collect numbers, like she has some knowledge behind it, so she can actually do some educated work. So that was step one. And then about 3 months ago, I started working with my current business partner.
Okay.
So in the last 3 months, a lot of it's just been like long conversations about how we're going to manage this and how we're going to do that. How are we going to structure our pricing and, you know, who's going to do the math to make sure that this makes sense so that we're not signing people up for this awesome 3-year contract that's actually going to put us underwater. So,
right.
Yeah, so now we're like poised and ready to go. We've got marketing materials just getting finished up. Our website just got redone. Kaisa did that, actually. She did awesome. My website, I thought it was pretty cool. It's a friggin' joke. Like, her layout is awesome. So it's really clean.
Yeah, I like the simplicity of it. I'm looking at it right now, and it's got the things that you need to know, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what's important.
So we'd like to build it out a little more and put more information on it. But for right now, you know, I'm not embarrassed to send somebody to that site. You know, they can get a lot of general knowledge. We're still deciding. We're debating on whether or not we're going to put pricing on it. Because I hate when you go to a website and you can't find it. It says like call for pricing. But at the same time, if somebody doesn't completely understand what we're offering, our price seems high.
Yeah, it is tough because I do the old school, put two prices out there, you know, one if you bring it to me, one if I got to come out to you in some form or fashion. And then all the other stuff, I don't bother putting on the site. People call and say, well, how much is this? And I tell them, you know, I have a list for myself. But and part of that is, you know, I've heard the debate before, whether you need pricing on your website or not. And I'm kind of like, you know what? I at least want to know, I want people to know whereabouts they're at, to whether they're even going to call me or whether it's something feasible for them, because I'm looking for a certain type of client. Pretty much the ones that don't balk about money.
Yep. Yes. We're looking for those clients too.
When you're balking about money, you know what? I'm going to give you the number to my competition and you can go over there and bother them.
Yes.
So, that's just kind of the realization I came to, probably this year. So,
yeah, I met a guy on Craigslist the other, you know, that I didn't want to work with, but he'll do your work for $20 an hour.
Exactly. There you go. He'll do it. And I don't know what type of job he does, but he'll do it. You know, and I started, you know, a lot of people in their businesses, when you think about, you know, business and what you do, you're probably like myself where you go in and you go above and beyond. And kind of what I was charging for the above and beyond was not enough to justify. You know, people are charging for a virus removal. And I would have people call me up and say, hey, can you come over and take care of this virus? And I'm like, well, I can come over. I, you know, an hour on site is probably going to have to come back to my shop because I do a bunch of different scans and stuff on it to solve the problem for sure. And well, can't you just bring over your little USB stick and stick it in and be done in an hour? I said, you're talking to the wrong type of technician. I'm not that type of technician. Yeah. Could I do that? Absolutely. I'd come over and solve your problem, get you back on the internet in probably about 20 minutes and be on my way home and have money in my pocket. But that's not what I do. I do a virus removal and then I do a cleanup on a computer. I've never separated the two of them. I think to do one without the other is, in my opinion, almost criminal because you're not really solving the whole problem. Everything that got broke from the malware and viruses and stuff like that need to be fixed so that they don't run into this problem quickly again. And so that's where I started justifying some of my prices and moving things up and going, here's what I charge. You're asking for my expertise to, you know, to help you out because you're not willing to learn it or do it yourself. So you're going to pay me, you know, to do it that way.
Yeah.
So,
I completely agree. If we do virus cleanups, it's not a run of one tool and walk away. It takes, you know, not days, but it takes time.
Sure.
And you got to run different scans and then go through and use a few, what are those? I always forget the name of them, but it's Mark Rusinovich's tools that are now from Microsoft. But auto runs and Process Explorer.
Yep.
You know, take a moment to go through and use those to just do some. It has some great color highlighting rules that you can set up so that it'll show you processes that are acting funny or not digitally signed and all that kind of stuff. So you can spot problems. Like that's one step that a lot of people probably don't do, and we do that, but.
Right. And it's, you know what, to be honest with you, I didn't use that tool until this year. And I just run it anyways, just to have it in there so that I can quickly run through it and go, okay, let's get rid of that. Okay. That registry key is bad. Let's just get that out of there. Even though it may or may not, you know, be anything, but if I see anything that pops up in my face and says, ooh, this is something that's really weird, I can address that problem very quickly. And that's, you know, and that to me is more important than, you know, just getting something done and getting it back to the customer. I want it back to the customer where the customer doesn't have to worry about it for, you know, at least a year. And I don't, to be honest with you, without some sort of managed service plan, I really don't think that that's feasible anymore. Some people disagree. They'll say that it is. You can put an antivirus on there, maybe malware bytes and some other things. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I really think it depends on what people are doing. People that are residential, that are on the internet all the time, they just get into trouble no matter what.
Yep. So. I don't know how many computers I've walked up to in the last month that even at a place that has an IT department and they're supposed to be managing everything, you walk up and they've got a conduit or something, you know, my web search, all of them, every single computer I walk up to that, you know, they've got something. So, you have to have some kind of a managed service plan or something in place. I don't know where these people get them because I don't get them on my computer and I spend a lot of time on the internet, but they get them from where they get them. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, you know what I think it is. It's a lot of these people will download these little programs and they don't realize all the stuff that comes with it, or they see something pop up, you know, hey, update your Flash player, you know, whatever. And so they just kind of click through. Or the ones that are even worse are, and what I've sold my managed services on is basically I've sat there and said, yeah, see, when this little thing is blinking down here, this little blue, what it looks like, a little blue box with some, you know, color in it, you need to update that. Or when you see the little Adobe A, and they're my clients tell me, they're like, you know, I don't touch any of that stuff because I don't know whether it's good or not. And I'm like,
yes.
That's why what we're going to set up for you is you don't have to touch that stuff anymore. We do it for you on a regular daily basis. So all you do is when you get on your computer, you do what you need to do on your computer and that's it. You don't have to worry about bringing it to me or, you know, all this other stuff. I can remote in if you have a problem and take care of it quickly.
Yeah. Yep. You know, the malware authors are kind of winning in that respect where people don't know. They've been fooled by something that looked legitimate before. So now they're scared to even keep their updates, which is important to keep their computer safe. So it's like this cycle that can never be broken unless they get someone that keeps, you know, keeps track of it for them, that knows what they're doing. My partner he's giving me a lot of crap because the other day I got an email from a client and we had been corresponding back and forth about I think it was a statement or something. But so the timing of this bad email was perfect. It was spoofed from her email and it was regarding the subject matter that we had already been talking about. So I opened it up and I clicked on it. And luckily, actually, I think it was Chrome that grabbed it, like just Google Chrome. And it wasn't even one of our tools.
Okay.
But Chrome popped up and was like, you know, big, scary red, like, hey, you don't want to go there. Like, do you really want to go there? And I said, no, that's right. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have clicked on that. I should know better because she doesn't ever send me stuff like this. Like, why would I even click on it?
Right.
But now he's like, ah, they got you. But
and we've all done it, because I remember back in the day when Windows Messenger was really big and I hadn't talked to a buddy in a while, and all of a sudden he said, "Hey, check out my new car." And like an idiot, I clicked on the link, and that was back when viruses would basically shut your computer down and corrupt everything. And, you know, today's day and age, it's like, it's hard to even call things viruses when they're, a lot of times they're just malware, and it's just things running in the background that are causing problems and wreaking havoc on your system and slowing your system down, basically, is what they're doing. They're,
right.
Like I said, you know, a lot of people say, you know, they get irritated with conduit and stuff like that. I'm like, well, these companies offer these other free programs. That's how they advertise. That's how they pay their bills. And that's their model. I don't agree with it, but these, you know, a search bar or a search toolbar is a legitimate thing.
Right.
It's just when you have 20 of them fighting against each other, you're it's like,
yeah,
I got to wait 10 minutes for my computer to start up. Are you serious? And you waited 6 months to call me? Why would you put up with that? I would rather put a gun to my head. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's like, come on. You know, I get, here's how bad I am. I get so weird. I've got a very robust system here. I Core i7, 32 gigs of RAM, you know, nice video card, play video games, all that kind of stuff. I still have a spinning drive. And I know I'm missing out on the SSD. And there are times when I, on a super fast computer, when I'm clicking on things and they're not opening up, and I get so frustrated because I've got to wait a nanosecond for the thing to open up. And I'm like going, boy, if I had an SSD, I wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah. We just saw Crucial. I don't know. They haven't been out long enough to know how they're going to hold up, but Crucial has a terabyte SSD. It looks like a true SSD, and it's a terabyte.
The MX550.
Yeah, there you go. And they're what, like $400 or something?
$400. $399 you can get it right now. 1 terabyte hard drive. And they're almost, as far as bang for the buck, they're just about as fast as the Samsung 840 Evo. And they're on par. They use the same, you know, the same chips and everything. You know, there's only a handful of manufacturers that do memory chips. There always has been. You know, we buy all these different brands of memory. In reality, there's only really been two or three companies that have done it since the beginning of the time. So the chips are all pretty much the same.
Yeah, the only thing that separates the different manufacturers right now is their, like, whatever trim they're using or the management to keep the drive from level, like, wearing out level evenly. But you got to get an SSD. I threw one in my laptop and I wish that I'd waited a little bit longer because prices have come down. I have a 120 gig.
Okay.
And it's a little rough to just because it's a little small. I have to kind of go through and compromise on what I'm going to keep on it. But my kids have a laptop that's running a little slow. I'm thinking this 120 gig would do pretty nicely over on that laptop. And then daddy can get himself a 256 or a 500. And
well, that's what I look at. You know, I've got 2 1-terabyte drives in mine. And the only reason I have the second one in there, because I came from a point back in the day where I would I had tried doing the separate drives. I put the operating system on one, and then I had a second drive where I, you know, took basically all my user files and everything and pointed it towards that second drive. It got to be a nightmare to manage. So I go, okay, I'm waiting. I can live on a 1 terabyte drive because I've got normally I run about 800 gigs on a 1 terabyte drive, no problem. And then I can use a secondary 1 terabyte, you know, spinning drive to back the stuff up. Because I definitely would want to have something like that. But yeah, it's getting to the point now where the price is coming down enough to where it's like, it would be nice to have a 1 terabyte SSD in my rig.
Yeah. We did a Windows install on an SSD last night and it took like 5 minutes.
Yeah. You know? My son just built it. Well, it was a $3,000 computer, but he just built one and I ordered him the parts and stuff and he put it together. We got him a Samsung 840 Evo. And yeah, it was 5 minutes. I had the Windows 8.1 on a USB stick, plugged it in, booted that computer up. Next thing I'm looking at the Windows screen, I go, what in the world?
Yep.
It was awesome.
Yeah. You
know? So.
Yeah. And I take regular images of my laptop just to keep it, you know, so that if something happens, which recently did, then, you know, I can re-image it and it only takes, you know, it's minutes. So.
You know, I use Acronis myself, and I have all that stuff, and I've never made an image. I almost, this is bad to say, I almost like it when I actually have to, you know, start over from scratch.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
But there are times when it's like you're in the middle of doing something and it's like, I ain't got time to wait for that. You know, yep. So it's like you got to have it, you know, have it now. I mean, I think about, you know, things like the Adobe suite and stuff like that. If I had to download all that stuff, if I'm using it, if I already had an image, I could just, boom, here's the image, done. So that's something I'm definitely going to need to work on for myself. It's on the list.
Yeah, it was on my list because I have the same thing. I like doing a clean install on my laptop. It's like housekeeping, you know.
Right.
But I had switched it to the SSD, so then I had to do a fresh build. I did try imaging, you know, my hard drive over to my SSD, and it was okay, but there was a couple of drivers and stuff that weren't happy about it. So right. I just did a fresh install. So I just got done getting my system like back up to exactly all the tools that I need. And then, I don't remember. Oh, I got something that I picked up from one of my clients. So I was trying to transfer some data, and I usually try to keep my, you know, USBs and stuff off, but I was in a hurry and got something. So it's like, screw it. I'm going to start over and build it up again. And I just got Windows updates caught up and all the drivers and the things that needed to go with my laptop done. So I imaged right then. I was like, okay, that took like 12 hours. So we're going to capture this image. And then I continued to build it up. I didn't capture that final image of like everything installed. And I did the same thing, like kicking myself. I had to transfer some files off of a dead, you know, computer's hard drive to the new one. And I used my laptop and I actually got CryptoLocker. I'd picked up CryptoLocker that was just sitting dormant in one of their files or something. So luckily I have, everything's always backed up on my machine. Okay. As soon as I saw anything that looked like CryptoLocker, I don't remember what I saw because it doesn't usually pop up until it's done. But I saw something and I was like, oh man. So I just like pulled the battery out of my laptop right away so it wouldn't corrupt my backups. And
How did you get that? Was that, you said that was off a USB key?
Well, I had a client who had been using a machine to download some music or some whatever, but they used it for work too. So I had connected their hard drive with a, you know, USB to SATA adapter to my laptop. And then I had another hard drive over here. So I was transferring, just capturing their documents folder and some things like that. And somewhere in that process, I picked up something and, man, I wish I could remember what I saw. Cause it's the symptoms that allowed me to catch it before it like started corrupting anything. Man, I don't know, but cause it wasn't CryptoLocker. It was a version of CryptoLocker, like one of the copycats.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I think the only reason I was even hyper aware of it is because the day before that, one of the head chefs at one of these restaurants I work with had got the full-blown CryptoLocker. It finished its job and popped up a message saying, if you would like to get your data back, it's no problem. It's just a service we like to offer you. You know, here, pay. And it was like $1,000. It was in Bitcoin you had to pay. And it was about the equivalent of $1,000.
Right. Yeah, I know they've gone up a little bit from the $300 they started at. If you, I don't know if you follow on Google Plus, Door to Door Geek had sent me an email. There's a website that supposedly you can put in. They somehow got I'm not sure exactly how this stuff works, but basically they got something that would give them access to the keys for CryptoLocker, and basically you can upload a file that's encrypted and it will give you the key to unlock your files on your computer.
Wow.
So yeah, I'll have to send, I'll definitely, since I talked about it, I will put that link in the show notes on the CryptoLocker stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That would be interesting. I'll definitely want to open up a Linux virtual machine before I go check that out just in case, but
well, you know,
sandbox myself.
Yeah. I never do that stuff. You know, it's funny because a lot of people, on my bench machine, I actually have Microsoft Security Essentials. And people get on me about it all the time. And, you know, if they're remoted in my machine or just looking at something or whatever, help me with something. You really need to get something more robust. I said, oh, really? Do I? Okay.
No, Security Essentials is great.
So I download, and I love ESET. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I downloaded it. I took off Security Essentials. I ran a full virus scan on it. And it came up with nothing. Everything I've, every customer's hard drive that I plugged into that machine, Security Essentials has always, if there's an infection on the drive, Security Essentials has always caught the infection before it goes, oh, hey, it pops up, need to clean. I hit clean, boom, takes care of the file, done. I move it over. And the only other thing I do is I make sure I do a full virus scan of the whole entire backup file before I put it back on a customer's computer. You know, and I'm in, and I do, and don't get me wrong, I do Malwarebytes, Superanta, Spyware, because I got those on the machine too. And in Microsoft Security Essentials, I do the three. And if it comes back clean with all three of those, I'm happy. I've never had a problem yet.
Yeah. No, those, I the only reason we don't use Security Essentials anymore, because I could never see the justification for spending $45 a year or $50 a year or whatever for any of the other programs, because Security Essentials does good a good enough job.
Right.
We get some, you know, kind of poor man's remote management kind of tools out of F-Secure. That's the only reason we use that one over anything else, because it's more than just because the antivirus itself is pretty much Kaspersky, Norton, McAfee, Security Essentials. They're all going to catch most of the same things. Right. We're not really one over the other. But we get those extra features from F-Secure. But otherwise, yeah, we were just using Security Essentials for the longest time because it's good enough. It works.
Well, and it's like I said before, all the machines I get in the shop, every type of antivirus that's ever been made, I've had in my shop that's been infected. So they're not none of them are 100%. I mean, so now my managed service that I provide is, you know, through, you know, remote support tech team. But it's the GFI, in the, I think that you get the Viper antivirus, but it's not just, so we provide that. But we provide a lot more things on top of that, which will protect you from if Conduit tries to go on your system. You know, the GFI, the way he's got the scripts and stuff set up, boom, it eradicates it. Boom, yep. Or stops it from even going in. No, we stopped this. So he's flagged a lot of that stuff so that even if you go to try to install it, it's just going to wipe it out right away before it even gets installed, which is what we want, because that's the only way, in my opinion, to keep a machine. It's not 100%, but I'm going to say 98% clean. Yeah. And if they do somehow, because you can still do it, if you still get an infection, you know, we come in and clean it, but we have such a base that it's very easy to clean. It's not a hardship where somebody waited 6 months. And I've showed people before, I said, listen, today was not the first day you got infected when you couldn't use Internet Explorer. Here's when this first one came in, and it was about 8 months ago, you know, and here's another one that came, you know, and you've been infected for a while. It's just now they're all fighting against each other and you have a hard time. Your machine's slow and you know, it doesn't want to get online. That's why you're bringing it to me. Next time, when you start to see a problem, bring it to me and we can take care of it that much quicker, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, it was funny. The same client, like a week before we did this job, they had finally let us do our antivirus, you know, install F-Secure everywhere. And so we did a cleanup on every computer. Well, we fixed one that had been infected for a while and it broke the internet, of course, because... taking the virus out, it messed up the stack or something. And so they're like, yeah, we bought this and we're supposed to fix this and it broke that. And like, yeah, well, it's been broken, but now it just, you know, we cleaned it up. So then actually, you know, we used to get it back online as a quick fix was tweaking.com has that
Windows all-in-one repair tool.
Yeah. We did all the cleanup stuff and let it run its Windows repairs, and it did. It fixed it. It got it online. So that we could say, okay, you can work for the day and we can, you know, come back and do it right. But that's another cool little tool all this stuff I learned from Podnets. So.
Well, it's funny because actually the computer I got sitting to the right of me, it's a laptop, had Windows 8 on it. Customers only had it for about a month. I updated it. When I was running the updates, of course, it puts Windows 8.1 in there. Somehow, some way, it broke Internet Explorer. Have no idea. But anyways, Internet Explorer was missing, even though when I went and looked in the root folder, it was still there, but it said it was missing. So whatever. So I'm running different. So I can't download the Microsoft Fix-It tool. You know, I even tried the Microsoft Fix-It portable, but you got to get to the website to get it. And
right.
I'm like, so that doesn't work. But I use D7.2 for my cleanups now. And one of the things that was happening was I could use the browser in D7 too, no problem. So I'm like, okay, still got internet. It's just the browser is really broke. And so I ran some fixes, you know, through D7 too. That didn't fix it. So I, you know, of course, Windows, you know, all-in-one repair tools there. I click on it, let it run. It takes a while. But once it got done, and I just ran the generic stuff. I didn't click anything, you know, anything special or whatever. Boom.
Yeah.
If it did a reboot, came back up, Internet Explorer fixed it. You know, it fixed it to mostly where it was supposed to be, but part of it was it had some bad tabs or whatever in there. But I went and did a reset on it, a hard reset myself. Boom, done. And yeah, back up and running. So yeah, that's a great tool. Windows All-in-One, I think it's called Windows All-in-One Repair Tool or something like that.
Yes. Tweaking.com.
Tweaking.com, that's right.
Yeah.
Great source, yeah. Well, do you have any, I mean, we've gone over a lot of things today.
Yeah.
I think we've covered everything from things you've been working on, some of your favorite tools, some of your favorite things that you, hardware that you use, some of your business tips that you've been going through, some of the things you've been doing in your business as far as partnering and growing your business and kind of the plans that you have, going forward, websites and all that kind of stuff. Is there anything else that you wanted to share that we might have missed today?
No, I think if I want to come on the show again, I'm going to have to do some more homework because I went through like my whole life story.
That's right. You know what? There's in the type of business I'm sure you're getting into now with the managed services and redefining your company, and you're going to have more of these types of stories where you're going to be able to come on and definitely share. We probably won't go over your backstory again, even though it was so awesome. But yeah, you'll have plenty of stuff to share, I'm sure, as you're growing your business. So
yeah, I'll be taking notes. I have a little task, managing tool, and now I have a little storytelling note like list just to throw stuff in so I can keep track. So
yeah, that's on my list too. But the list that I don't have, I really got to get it working on that. But being a one man shop, that's it's tough sometimes. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I thank you for coming and sharing, your time with us and giving us all these good nuggets of information. It's been great. If people want to reach you, what would be the best way to reach you?
Probably the best way would be to go through the ttcscomputerservices.com website and use that. There's a contact form on there. That goes to me. It also usually goes to my business partner and my office manager. But you could email me at brad@ttcscomputerservices.com.
Okay.
I can't guarantee that you'll get through my spam filter. It's a little aggressive sometimes. But the form, contact form always works because that's usually how I find new business. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, I appreciate it. Again, thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us. And if you guys want to find me, you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallisch or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, again, Brad contacted me about coming on the show and we set up a time and was real easy and sat down and just had a fun time talking with him. And he shared, that's how easy it is. You only have to email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com and we'll get you set up with that. So the more the merrier. I love hearing everybody's stories and I love that people are coming in the community and actually sharing with each other. And you guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. Each show will give you some good apps to try on your phone or tablet. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in learning how to do remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. You want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech? Listen to the Geeksters. You want to learn about Linux so that even you can understand? Then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server-related, at work or for fun, check out the Server Show. In the market for a new phone? Check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information about your mobile technology. Take your health to the next level and check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.